Welcome to the Intelligence Briefing, What's the Buzz? Where leaders and hands-on experts in AI and automation share how they have turned hype into outcome. I'm your host, Andreas Welch, and if you would like to stay current on running AI in business, make sure to sign up for my newsletter at intelligence-briefing.com.
Today, we have a special episode for you. Now, I've been playing one of my favorite retro games, What's the Buzz? But I'm kind of stuck. And that's why I've asked a few experts to help me win with AI. Sumil Gupta and Kieran Gilmary, thanks for joining.
Great to be here. I've been in business technology for about the last 27 years. I describe both because I love technology, but love what it can do for a business. I've sat in intelligent automation roles. I've ran AI teams for 13, 14 years. I've ran businesses, large, small, international, you name it. I've been there, done that. Hopefully today I can add some value. Recently, I've written a book on the A to Z to digital transformation. I'm going to use some of the answers in that book, hopefully in today's session as well. Delighted to be here.
Thank you. My name is Sumil Gupta. I'm the founder of Algorithmic Scale. It's a company based in Sweden. And we focus on building the monetization and commercial stack for AI-based business models. What it means is we help our clients build digital production services. We help them build digital operating models for delivering the value that they create from AI, but also help them with value capture, which is basically helping them with the pricing strategies, helping them with different monetization strategies. And this is something which kind of very exciting. So I am very kind of crazy about algorithmic operating models and algorithmic business models. And now this company is something that will intended to make those visions into reality.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. If you're just joining the stream, drop a comment in the chat what tricks you are looking for. No cheating allowed, by the way. So, what do you say? Should we start playing?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, this one is a warm-up. When I hit the buzzer, you'll see a sentence. I need your help. So, can you answer with the first thing that comes to mind and why? In your own words. We only have 60 seconds for your answer. And for those of you watching us live, please drop yours in the chat as well. So, team, are you ready for What's the Buzz? If AI were a city, which would it be? 60 seconds, go.
Oh, wow. Let me say Boston for a couple of reasons. What an amazing practical city. There's 1,001 amazing things there, all wrapped up in a reasonably small package. When everybody goes to Boston, they all experience something different. Everybody thinks of it as a different place. So I think it was a US-Irish city. I'm sure a lot of other people remember it from all sorts of movies and different things, but a really practical, thriving city where a lot of tech exists, where a lot of people are making an impact. And there's still lots of potential for things, crazy great things to happen.
All right. I would say Stockholm. And the reason being, I think one of the things which I like about Stockholm is it has three qualities that you need in AI. First of all, there is very much decentralized decision-making, very decentralized accountability. That means people are individually very innovative and they are thinking about the problems and solutions. At the same time, there is a very collaborative culture. So collaboration is very, very important here in Stockholm. And we see people collaborating very openly in a very trusted environment. And that kind of builds upon each other's works, each other's thoughts, and help us kind of come up with very holistic solutions.
So great job answering on the fly. Thank you so much. And, you know, I already heard you say something transformation, right? And that it's a significant effort. So let's take a look at the first question here. How do you define digital transformation? Maybe Kieran, can you help me with this one?
Yeah, this is kind of a big one. Let me talk about three P's, people, process, and product. So if we're talking about digital transformation, we're talking about a mindset change. It's not a case of throwing something to the IT department saying, right, transform it because it's technology. Everyone in the organization needs to think digital, behave digitally, and act digitally. We say act digitally, what do we mean? Well, no longer analog. All the things that they deal with are digital. The tooling, the platform, and again, the product as well. So once we were dealing with a lot of physical products, now we're dealing with a lot of digital products. So those three things are primarily, then you're trying to get all those things together. So when we're talking about digital transformation, we're talking about change culture, changing people, as well as the technology. A lot of people focus on the tech side, Andreas, but people transform businesses, not technology. They just use really great technology to augment what they do. So once everybody's got the right mindset, they're going to do it digitally. And that matters from everyone from the post room right the way up to the chairman of the company. I'm a tremendous fan of saying an executive team needs to understand technology, because most business strategies these days are technology enabled. It's a requirement, just like understanding finances these days. Once you've built an organization to act digitally and think digitally, your products tend to end up being digital products, or there's a pile of AI or data surrounding those products, allowing you to deliver new value. Very quickly, an example: insurance brokers years ago used to pick up a telephone, ring them, you would get a piece of insurance sent out in the post numbers of days later. Now you're able to log into online websites that work out who you are, work out your preferences, work out next best action, next best offer, product upsell, cross-sell, credit ratings, debt ratings, renewal retention rates. Chances are when that goes through the system, you're ending up with a digital certificate, because the computing systems inside of the company are all based on a digital platform with a digital front. And there is very little manual paperwork. Everything's really instant. And when it comes to making a claim, you know, take a picture with your phone, use AI to describe the accident scene, work out the value, order the breakdown vehicle, order the garage that's going to pick up the car, give you a cost estimate, give you another vehicle or a hotel, depending on how far you are from home, all done automated without the necessity to have someone there. But at the same time, all of this tech and AI and everything else around it, where you've digitally transformed your firm, should be sensitive to you as an individual. And therefore, it should connect you with an amazing human who understands intimately your needs, because they've profiled you, used whatever big data sets that exist on the market, and are able to answer the question where humans add tremendous value, and to be able to do, again, very digitally, you know, camera, face, phone, tech, WhatsApp, you name it, whatever channel, door, or whatever way you want to engage, they're there to do it. And all that data is connected together. So there's one customer view. Everybody's aware of it. And you as a customer feel like you've been treated as an individual, but chances are you're one of many, many, many customers. So people, product, place, or platform, sorry, mindset change, method change, and the actual digital product that you've got at the end of the day, that's changed too. And then there'll be a whole set of digital metrics around that to measure your performance. And all the time you're attempting to remove attrition from the process using technology and constantly, constantly, constantly driving forward. Otherwise, you run the risk of being out of business. That's a process someone once called digital Darwinism. And I kind of love that phraseology.
So great points all around. Thanks, Kieran. The part that really resonates with me is that about people. Because when I typically think of transformation, you know, I think of changing the employee experience, changing something for them. But I think you made an excellent point that it's not only just about the employee, but actually also the customer. And so, you know, spinning that further, I think that's where Samil, you and the algorithmic decision-making and your focus on that come in. So maybe let's take a look at question number two. Maybe Samil, that is something that you can help. The question is, what do companies need to do to monetize AI? So over to you, Samil.
So one of the things, I mean, when you look at monetization is, I see it's a lot about mindset. And kind of one of the things which I'm a bit concerned is a lot of companies, they're working in a very project-centric mindset. That means they're focusing a lot on activities and not on outcomes. And I like to think of, when I think about monetization and I look at solutions, I like to think of them as like a four concentric circles. Like, so the innermost circles, your data model, and that's what everything, the value that you have, that is the data. And then you go one circle outside, and then you have the decision intelligence and you have your decision models. And that's where you kind of use your AI, you use your ML, you use different techniques to kind of make sense of that data and kind of convert that into insights. And people kind of tend to stop there. But there are two additional circles. The moment you go outside decision intelligence, you get into the commercial model. And commercial model is really about relationships. It's about processes. Why are we a business? What kind of relationship are we kind of enforcing? Or what kind of relationship are we enabling? And then there's finally the external model, which is the business model. inside which all of this happens, right? And that is more about how do we make money? How do we lead? If you want to go from kind of looking at AI as project that we implement or AI as a model that we implement, if you want to go right towards monetization, we have to follow this three-step process. And it's very simple. I call it PCM, productize, commercialize, and monetize. So productization is really about packaging data and AI models in such a way where it's not only valuable, but it's also easily consumable. That means you have to go that extra mile towards your users, helping them derive value. And I really believe that helping the end user derive value from your product is really the responsibility of the product manager. It's not the consumer's responsibility. Many people say they have to come meet halfway, but I think we have to go all the way. Commercialization, that is really, one part is scaling and industrializing it. But other part is also to build the entire ecosystem. You know, how are you going to deliver this to your customer? How are you going to operate it? How are you orchestrate it? How you deliver services? That whole operating model principle comes into commercialization. And finally, monetization is where you kind of get paid for all the hard work that you've done. That goes to your contracts, to your pricing. And how do you really kind of create value for the end user, but also for yourself, for being this entrepreneurial venture? So I think that's what monetizing should look like. And we need to really move away from this project mindset. A lot of companies are trying to get this project management around it and AI. It's not really working out, and get towards the product mindset, which is more focused on outcomes and more focused on kind of incremental value creation.
Thanks, Sumil. I really like that part that you mentioned, you know, to think more broadly and not to approach it just like any other IT project. I think that's really key. So maybe, Kieran, for you, so maybe you can build on that. Are you seeing a lot of customers already doing that and a lot of companies like in the insurance example really doing that, monetizing that data?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, done right, you do. Do you know what I mean? Because ultimately, why are we in business? Of course, as Samil says, it's not about just doing activities. It's about actually creating something that's of value that someone is willing to pay money for. So you can use AI in lots of ways. So the example we gave a moment ago, you know, insurance, yes, of course, next best action, cross-sale, up-sale, renewal, retention figures, whatever else. But I've seen some other great companies having been set up literally to collect data, and then they're using the data to sell the data on for different purposes. So Facebook's an amazing example of that. You know, TikTok, you name it, all these companies are set up to collect vast amounts of data, and then they use that data to allow other companies to target, or they sell services like LinkedIn, you know, to do targeting, marketing, you name it. So you can use the data that you've got for a tremendous amount, in a tremendous amount of different ways to actually derive value. You know, the other bit as well is we're talking about, that's external value for me. We're looking at the internal value as well. So if I start to get IoT devices, and you start seeing a lot of shipping companies to be a lot more careful around what they're doing. And this can be anything from literally logistics, shipping from one country to another. And then you use the analytics to work out, when should I travel? How long should I travel? How quick should I travel? You see the same thing with airlines or cargo ships or whatever else, right the way to building digital twins. For example, if I've got an oil field sitting somewhere in the North Sea or in wherever it is, you start to see companies using AI to build digital twins of those to operate them in the most efficient manner possible. You also see them using AI to do predictive maintenance on equipment, because every hour that those particular facilities are down, it's not, you know, hundreds of dollars, it's potentially hundreds of millions of dollars where these things are not actually operating. You see the real value of that now in the world where energy and production costs and oil costs and whatever else are going through the roof. The really smart companies are looking at every single part of their value chain, both the customer end, their own performance end, and everything in between. And then they're using other analytics in tremendous ways around their people analytics, you know, looking at how likely people are to stay, looking at analytics as to who they should hire, you know, looking at analytics to work out how do you put teams together to work in the best possible, most efficient way, and everything else in between. So AI analytics are amazingly powerful when you use them across the entire value chain, but you need to be clear, as Samil says, in the very first instance, what are the outcomes you're actually trying to get? And some of those might be third-party outcomes, deliberately like Facebook. Some of those might be deliberate, building a digital twin and working off that to drive efficiency. And some of them could actually be what I describe as making money off the exhaust fumes of companies' activities. So I've seen some companies that are set up to do quoting. They can't actually quote for a particular piece of business. And what they've done is use the AI or the data that they've collected to sell on to other companies, and they're making money out of that AI as well. Clever example is a large company in the consumer space. They get thousands of people and companies giving them their very latest details every day to get quoted on a particular type of business. I can't name his private company. And then what they actually do is sell that company on to other insurance companies, other targeting companies, other companies that validate that these companies exist with the latest contact details and the directors and everything else to do credit checks and. So there's really clever things happening across the company's value chain. And then they're taking that data, selling it on to allow other companies to do interesting and different things as well, but always with a business outcome in mind.
So Kieran, I think you're making a key point here, right? That it's really about the business outcome and the business value and making all of that measurable. Because a lot of times I also hear about, you know, we're doing automation and it'll lead to a better employee experience. And I think that's important and good and fair. Of course, we want our employees to feel good about their work and be happy and enjoy coming to work. But that's certainly not enough, right? It needs to be more and it needs to be measurable. So I really like that component that you are highlighting that here. And so maybe question for you, Sumil. Kieran already talked about insurance as one example, but what types of data are you seeing companies monetize with AI?
So I think the field itself is kind of still evolving for a reason, because a lot of companies are still trying to get their head around the data quality, you know, and for me, data quality is always fit for purpose. And then, you know, kind of depends a lot what you want to do, but a lot of companies have taken upon themselves to define the pristine, you know, got like data, whatever they want to have. It's more a world of fantasy. IoT data is one thing that we see most of the companies, they want to now monetize, because you get like real information about what's happening on the ground. Logistics data, definitely very much in use. I think financial data that companies are producing, transactional data. So, I mean, it's not so much for me about what data, but like what purpose they are driving. So the data sources can come from both internally, externally, from devices, you know, but it's more about what companies need to figure out is how are we differentiating ourselves? How are we positioning ourselves? How are we really creating value in this thing? So IoT is, for example, one of the things that people have interest in, but I think there's a long way to go to really integrate that data, other sources of data to kind of create something tangible.
I see. So, you know, when we talk about data, access to data, different types of data, monetizing it in, you know, for improving the customer experience, improving the employee experience, I think that's a key point. So maybe let's take a look at question number three. And that is, what is the role of ethics in this? Maybe that's something you can help me with. Maybe, Kieran, can you take a snap at it?
Yeah, it's a massive topic and has probably come to the fore in the press around that company mentioned earlier on, you know, Facebook. And we had Cambridge Analytica, who took the data and used that to what you might describe, you know, profile people and then try and persuade people to do particular things. An example of, was it the best use of data possibly for the company? Was it the best use of data for political parties and people themselves? You know, debatable, probably not. It's like all new technologies. This is an interesting one, because if we talk about IT programming in general, now we're worried about security and people, company security and financial loss. Ethics has been one of those things where everybody got really excited about the power of AI. And they probably got so excited that they concentrated on doing the actual work. But when they worked all these things through, they discovered that there was a genuine people impact. Let me go back to insurance and give you an example. A lot of companies run retention analytics. So what they do is they build a model, they work out which customers are likely to stay with them and which customers are not likely to stay. And very often what they do is they actually price the insurance according to that. So if you're highly likely to stay, you will not get a discount from a broker or insurance company. Chances are you'll actually get a price rise. If you're highly likely to leave, they will probably offer you a discount to stay. Statistically speaking, because I've been in the industry, the older generation, and again, whatever age you want to put that, 50, 60, 70, tend not to look around, tend to trust at times tended not to be as digitally literate. So what you're actually doing is targeting people who had very little propensity to move, and you were constantly raising the prices, whereas someone in a different cohort would have left and they were getting a different price for exactly the same product. Not exactly ethically sound, and probably against numbers of insurance regulations at the same time. You do see that as well in credit referencing and credit agencies. If you are someone on a lower income and have a poor credit history, then when it comes to accessing credit and buying something like a car or a financial product or something else, a house, a mortgage, to cover that risk, a company's actually going to charge you more money. Now, again, you know, that may be correct from a company point of view, but how ethical is it that you or I, who are coming as two consumers who are probably the same but might have slightly different credit history, are getting two different prices? So anywhere from potential manipulation of people, manipulation of pricing, treating people differently who are getting the same product, all these are technically and have risen as poor ethical practices and poor outcomes of using analytics that resulted in some harm or other to consumers. From a company point of view, though, just remember this, if we're talking purely financial, using analytics to make those decisions to derive the most profit that you possibly can is something that most companies want to strive for. Therefore, we end up with an ethical debate. You know, how ethical is it for a company that's set up to make profit to use every tool at its advantage? And again, if you have superior technology, you're going to do better than a company that doesn't. But data analytics is one of those things that really risen to the fore around this particular topic. It's really powerful where machines can crunch large volumes of data that companies have. And to Samil's point, they can also now buy other sets of data to allow them to make more micro decisions. They can be more persuasive using data. If you combine that data with behavioral psychology, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, you can start to tangibly manipulate, and I use that word both positively and negatively, how people will respond to your product and your price and everything else in between. I personally think that, like, data companies need to think through all of the operations that they're doing. Companies who use data need to think all the way through to the end of their operations. They need to focus on consumers to make sure they're providing great value and not manipulating them. Can we trust companies to do that? Question mark. I don't think every company in the world is a horrible, unethical group. You might assume it the way the press treats companies who deal with AI. I do think there's companies out there that do forget their responsibility, their bigger responsibility to society and to individuals to treat them fairly and equitably. Do we need a regulator? Question mark. The medical industry, for example, is a regulator to make sure that people build medical or medicines that don't harm people. Is it arguable that because data has become so prevalent and so important in society that we need a regulator to allow companies to behave honorably and equitably? Possibly and probably.
Thanks. So ethics obviously plays a key role. I know there is a lot of debate happening between experts and also on a government level, like at the EU with the AI Act, or even over here in the US. But maybe question for you, building on that, Samil, what do you see in your work? How early should companies really think about ethics when they do work around AI, and who should actually own this topic of AI ethics?
Yeah, I focus a lot on the ethical commercialization, ethical monetization. The only kind of thing is that I think the ethics discussion should not be an afterthought. Ethics has to be built into the design of the product. Before we even start talking about a product, we start building the value framework. And in that value framework, we have to start embedding ethical constraints and ethical policies. The reason why this is important is if you put that in the initial part framing of the problem, we'll go both technical framing and commercial framing, then what happens is that while you get your model up and running, it's already too late to look after ethics after the model is being built. And then we like to think that our data scientists are smart enough to figure out how the model is responding, and that is completely not true. Once the model is deployed, it tends to have its own life, and how it's making prediction, of course, you could figure it out later on if you do a diagnostics, but then it's already too late. Denial of service, infringing on somebody's rights, manipulation, social engineering, all those are real threats now. you cannot bet late enough. You can't do it early enough. I can't stress upon this. So the framework that we create, the value framework, in this, in that value framework that we create the first time, and that is where you have to start looking at ethics, because you should start looking at who are the people who are going to be most vulnerable. I think you didn't give an example of the people who are elderly, who might be impacted the most, but who are the least, who are also the most vulnerable. We also saw some examples of gig economy, like drivers within Uber who get impacted because they deal with an algorithm on which they have no say. Even Uber does not have any say on this. They can't figure out whether the decision that was taken was right or wrong. So you have to understand that the decision intelligence works within the commercial framework. You cannot control the decision from point to point, but we can definitely control the commercial framework which we operate. And we have to realize that these companies, they have massive amounts of data, thousands of data points about us. So they have a lot of power in that, in what they can do. So then it really comes down to this ethical design of offerings, ethical pricing of offerings. Even though, and it's like dynamic pricing. So when we are doing dynamic pricing, we should not infringe upon somebody's rights. We should not discriminate against people. That's the kind of thing which is a trade-off between doing what is right versus doing what is easy. And I kind of hate to say that, but a lot of companies, they're not really even putting a thought around these topics. So all these ethics and everything, governance, they come very late in the cycle. By then, it's usually too late to do anything about it.
Fantastic. So when it comes to ethics, start early and make sure it's pervasive throughout the project. That's awesome, team. We've made it. Thank you so much for helping me play What's the Buzz today.
Hooray.
So let me quickly summarize. First of all, if you think about digital transformation, keep the three P's in mind: people, place, and platform. But really, people should be the focus and the center of your initiatives, whether it's your employees or your customers, because the transformation certainly impacts them in different ways. Secondly, if you're thinking about monetization of AI, really don't treat it like any other IT project, because it's not. The different layers of it in AI should really be core. And as you're doing that, get to number three, make sure that ethics is a part of it from the very beginning all the way to the end of that project. So we're getting close to the end of the show.
Thanks, Andreas.
Thank you so much for joining and learning with us. See you next time for another round of the Intelligence Briefing, What's the Buzz?